on the lookout. In these times of ours, though concerning the exact year there is no need to be precise, a boat of dirty and disreputable appearance, with two figures in it, floated on the Thames between Southwark Bridge, which is of iron, and London Bridge, which is of stone, as an autumn evening was closing in. The figures in this boat were those of a strong man, with ragged, grizzled hair and a sun-browned face, and a dark girl of 19 or 20, sufficiently like him to be recognisable as his daughter. The girl rowed, pulling a pair of sculls very easily. The man, with the rudder lines slack in his hands and his hands loose in his waistband, kept an eager lookout. He had no net, hook or line, and he could not be a fisherman. His boat had no cushion for a sitter, no paint, no inscription, no appliance beyond a rusty boat-hook and a coil of rope, and he could not be a waterman. His boat was too crazy and too small to take in a cargo for delivery, and he could not be a lighterman or river-carrier. There was no clue to what he looked for. But he looked for something, with a most intent and searching gaze. The tide, which had turned an hour before, was running down, and his eyes watched every little race and eddy in its broad sweep as the boat made slight headway against it, or drove stern foremost before it, according as he directed his daughter by a movement of his head. She watched his face as earnestly as he watched the river, but in the intensity of her look there was a touch of dread or horror. Allied to the bottom of the river rather than the surface, by reason of the slime and ooze with which it was covered, and its sodden state, this boat, and the two figures in it, obviously were doing something that they often did, and were seeking what they often sought. Half savage as the man showed, with no covering on his matted head, with his brown arms bare to between the elbow and the shoulder, with the loose knot of a looser kerchief lying low on his bare breast in a wilderness of beard and whisker, with such dress as he wore seeming to be made out of the mud that begrimed his boat, still there was businesslike usage in his steady gaze. So with every lithe action of the girl, with every turn of her wrist, perhaps most of all with her look of dread or horror, they were things of usage.
"Keep her out, Lizzie. Tide runs strong here. Keep her well afore the sweep of it."
Always watching his face, the girl instantly answered to the action in her sculling. Presently the boat swung round, quivered as from a sudden jerk, and the upper half of the man was stretched out over the stern. His arms were wet and dirty, and he washed them over the side. In his right hand he held something, and he washed that in the river too. It was money. He chinked it once, and he blew upon it once, and he spat upon it once.
"For luck," he hoarsely said, before he put it in his pocket. "Lizzie, it's my belief you ain't the sight of the very river."
I do not like it, father."
"As if it wasn't your living, as if it wasn't meat and drink to you."
At these latter words the girl shivered again, and for a moment paused in her rowing, seeming to turn deadly faint. It escaped his attention, for he was glancing over the stern at something the boat had in tow. She resumed her rowing, as another boat of similar appearance, though in rather better trim, came out from a dark place and dropped softly alongside.
"In luck again, gaffer,"
said a man with a squinting leer, who sculled her and who was alone.
"I knowed you was in luck again by your wake as you come down."
"Ah," replied the other dryly, "so you're out, are you?"
"Yes, pardner. I says to myself," he went on, "directly you hove in view, yonder's gaffer, and in luck again. By George, if he ain't. Skull it is, pardner. Don't fret yourself, I didn't touch him."
This was in answer to a quick, impatient movement on the part of Gaffer, the speaker at the same time unshipping his scull on that side and laying his hand on the gunwale of Gaffer's boat and holding to it.
"He's had touches enough, not to want no more."